Io Saturnalia. How do you say that?
Io Saturnalia.
Saturnalia.
Right. Okay. It changes every time with me.
Io Saturnalia, yeah. Rhiannon. Hello.
Happy Saturnalia.
Come in and know me better.
What? So you're more au fait with your Dickens than I am, clearly.
I'm more au fait with my Muppet Christmas Carol than you are.
It is a
okay,
great
that
movie.
Sounded really good. Let's get this podcast going. Yay!
I know we're able to talk.
Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, Senior Lecturer in Classics and Ancient History at La Trobe University. This is episode CIX, Saturnalia. That's right, it's that time of year again, when the biggest holiday of the Roman calendar is upon us. So prepare your sacrifice to Saturn, gather round all ye you servants, and enjoy this timeless Saturnalia classic.
Let's discuss Saturnalia, and we should start with who Saturn is, why he's a god. He's a Titan, is that right?
Yes. Well, Saturn is known mostly for being the father of Jupiter. So you might think of him as the god who preceded Jupiter as being in charge of the universe, or certainly in charge of Italy. And the Romans thought of him as being the god when they had their golden age. So when the golden age was in Italy, Virgil famously says this, then Saturn was the lead god, and then he kind of ceded to Jupiter. And Jupiter is now the god who's in charge. And when the Greeks and Romans kind of conflated their mythology, or rather the Romans tended to attach Greek stories to their equivalent gods, he, to a certain extent, took on some of the attributes of Cronos, who's the Greek equivalent, the father of Zeus, which are not nearly as savory because, of course, they involve Cronos trying to stop the succession by eating his own children.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on.
Hence the famous painting by Goya, Saturn devouring his children.
Mm.
But really, that myth is about Cronos. Anyway, so Saturn is a god who's associated with fertility, with bounty, because of this golden age association. And he gives us lots of names of not just Jupiter, but also Juno. Okay, so Juno is often known as Saturnia because, of course, she's the daughter of Saturn, and Jupiter and Juno are brother and sister.
Mm.
So he's important for all kinds of reasons as being a kind of older god, but god of a time that we look back to nostalgically.
Okay, and why does he deserve such a significant festival?
Well, I guess because he's associated with that fertility and bounty, he gets a festival that really celebrates the introduction of agriculture and civilized lifestyle, because agriculture means you're settled as opposed to being nomadic or pastoral. So he gets his festival at a time in December when you've finished all of the planting. All right, that's over with.
Mm.
You've done the harvest and then you've replanted and you're going into winter. Some people theorize that his name is actually related to that very activity, because there's a Latin verb sero, which has a past participle satus, which means sown. So does his name Saturn come from having finished off with the sowing of
yes,
the seeds?
Yeah.
So even as we're going into winter, we're sort of thinking about how we're going to have that fruit coming back to us, the corn and the fruit coming next year.
So it's traditionally celebrated around this time of year. We start the 17th of December, but the date gets a bit fluid as dates and calendars and systems move around in Roman times.
As far as we can tell, it's always the 17th of December that's very strongly associated with it. It's more how many days it is and quite how the Romans refer to that day. So it's around the time of the approach of the winter solstice, which is on the 21st. Its duration changed over time. So one of our main sources we'll discuss, a man called Macrobius, says originally it was just one day, the 17th. Then by the late Republic, it seems to have been 5 days long. So you get 5 days of celebration, which sounds good, doesn't it? Then Augustus came along and was a bit of a killjoy and shortened it to 3 days.
His motivation was he didn't want the courts closed as long as 5 days.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So what we can say from that is that during that time, you couldn't do any official business. There's an incentive, at least from officialdom, to shorten the Saturnalia. But it wasn't popular because certainly by the time of the, not very long after that, Claudius seems to have extended it back to 5 days. And what Macrobius says is, whatever they were doing, it seems to have been celebrated for the full week.
Okay.
So it's a bit like when your workplace closes down early because they know you're not going to do any work on the 24th,
sure.
Don't they?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a big celebration. It's, it seems to be the best part of a week long. For the Romans, it's kind of the longest festival they have and the one that's most associated with jollity and giving up your sort of normal work going on.
Mm. And it gets to the point where the whole month of December becomes associated with Saturnalia, doesn't it? So they'd started playing the Mariah Carey songs, you know, right about December the 1st.
Well, it's nothing, though, compared to what we all complain about these days where it all starts in September. So
the Saturnalia creep is real.
Yeah. The calendar is also a bit complicated here. Of course, for later days in the month, they count backwards from the calends, the first day of the following month. So originally, under the Republican calendar, it's the 14th day before the calends of January.
Mm. So they count it that way.
Yeah. But then Caesar, in the Julian calendar, added 2 days to December.
Yes.
Because the calendar was way off course.
Yeah.
So now it gets to be the 16th day before the calends of January. That's what I mean by it stayed around what we would call the 17th, which the Romans did not call it the 17th of December.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to change the date themselves. They had to change the calculation of that date.
Yeah.
Which must have been very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder they just went with the whole of December.
And then you've got the duration, the length changing of the festival. Because I take it was very popular. This was the Roman holiday of Roman holidays, wasn't it?
Yeah, the evidence we have from, say, Republican poet like Catullus, he calls it the best of days. That's in his 14th poem. He's talking about it as being a time of jollity. We do have some complaints about it from the philosopher Seneca. He says the whole mob has let itself go in pleasures. I don't mean to be down on Seneca, who I actually rather love. He's not on the side of enjoying yourself from our point of view here. So that's Seneca in his letters, number 18, chapter 3.
So we've got mentions of Saturnalia in different texts because it was important to a lot of Romans. But we've got very few texts that focus just specifically on Saturnalia, don't we? We've got no manual, for example. We've got no, this is the chants that need to be done at the temple or anything.
No, I mean, when Catullus brings it up in a poem, he assumes his audience knows what he's talking about. He doesn't sit down and explain to us what happened at the Saturnalia. What we could do with is somebody like Plutarch coming along and saying, oh, the Romans have this weird thing called the Saturnalia. Let me tell you how it's celebrated. But unfortunately,
yeah.
Plutarch doesn't happen to do that. He does it for other bits of Roman custom, but not that one. So we do have lots of bits and pieces that we can put together. But our main source for it is actually quite late. And even that isn't some kind of complete version of Go to Woe on the Saturnalia, although it is called Saturnalia.
Yes.
And it's a text by a writer called Macrobius, who's writing in the 5th century CE, which, as you know, I think is very, very late.
That's way out of your comfort zone. But keep going. I'm interested now.
Well, it's basically set at the time of the Saturnalia. So he's describing a conversation, kind of a party, a symposium, I guess you'd say, kind of party conversation of famous names. It's a bit like, you know, the imaginary party.
Oh, yes.
People talk
yes,
about. Who would you have at your dinner party?
Yeah, sure. Stephen Fry, David Attenborough.
Yeah, yeah.
Off we go. Yeah.
Well, that's what he's got. And they meet on the 16th of December.
Yeah.
And then it just goes on. They just talk throughout the Saturnalia. So this is a party that lasts a week. And he was writing in the 5th century. It's set, some people think they can be specific about this, in 383 CE. It's a nostalgic work which looks back maybe about 50 years.
Mm.
And also, it's by this point, we know Christianity is really important in the Roman Empire. Macrobius never mentions it. He only talks about pagan customs. So
yeah,
it's sort
okay.
of potentially nostalgic in that way as well. They quote from a lot of ancient texts. So sometimes, this is a slight aside, but sometimes when we're saying we only have fragments of certain works, Macrobius might be a good source for some of those. It might be where we're getting them from.
So the equivalent is if we didn't know anything about Christmas now, but we read Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
God help us.
Which is set at Christmas and is named after Christmas, and you can gauge Christmas customs about feasting and how that's celebrated and everything there.
Yeah, I know. But in that case, you'd think we all ate a goose, wouldn't you? And
but at that time, you did.
Yeah, I guess you find out about 19th century customs.
And who knows if the stuff that we're going to discuss in this podcast about how Saturnalia was celebrated is typical for actual Saturnalia, you know?
Well, there's a theory that Dickens kind of invented Christmas, isn't there?
Yes.
So this might be a circular argument.
Seneca could sit down, listen to this podcast and go, what the hell are they on about?
Yeah, he'd think that about all of our podcasts, believe me.
He would. I do not want to read his review on iTunes.
Somebody's going to do that now.
Don't write in, Seneca. Don't write in. Okay, so that's our main source, but we've also got a bit from Lucian. We've got much from Martial. You can piece together.
Yeah, I mean, Lucian, who's a second century satirist writing in Greek, also wrote a text called Saturnalia, which is a sort of fantasy about Kronos, the Greek equivalent, talking to his priest.
Mm.
And really all we get from that is this is a time during this festival when it's a holiday time. Nothing's going to happen during that time. So we don't get very much information we can get elsewhere there. And it's a fantasy. So and Martial, who he mentions the Saturnalia sometimes, but he has two books of poetry called the Xenia and the Apophorata, which I challenge you to say after a few drinks. These are two books of two liners, which are meant to accompany gifts. So instead of going and buying your Hallmark card...
Yeah, you put a poem from Marshall in there. So you wrote Christmas cracker jokes kind of thing.
Well, I would like to think they're a little more high quality than that. But yes, they're sort of appropriate to the occasion. So we can find out bits and pieces from these other sources too.
All right, so how did we celebrate Saturnalia?
Well, we mustn't forget amongst all of this that it is at its heart a religious festival.
Yes,
so it does start.
Wait, we're talking about Saturnalia still, not Christmas, aren't we?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just thought I'd check there.
Yeah, because I'm about to say we start with a sacrifice, which wouldn't be appropriate for Christmas, really, would it?
Wait, have I been practicing Christmas wrong? Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Sorry, keep going.
The
sacrifice.
Police are on their way. So there's a sacrifice at the Temple of Saturn, appropriately. Which is one of the oldest temples in Rome. It's in the Roman Forum.
There's still bits of that, a few columns standing.
Yeah, they're from a later period than its original manifestation, but, you know, because it comes from the early 5th century BCE. The Temple of Saturn functioned as the state treasury. So you try and disentangle religion from the other bits of Roman life, it doesn't work.
Mm.
When they sacrificed, you might have seen relief sculpture or even paintings or sculptures of Roman men with a veil over their heads. There's a famous one of Augustus called the Augustus of the Via Labicana. That's what they did. That's how they kind of turned themselves into a priest. They took a bit of their toga and put it over their heads. But the sacrifice to Saturn was carried out without the priest being veiled, which was a bit odd. So the Romans said that was with foreign custom.
Mm.
And basically, it's how Greeks sacrificed. So there's some kind of strange thing going on there, of which many things have been written. Quite how this develops, does it mean that it's come from the equivalent, the chronia, the sacrifice to Kronos? That the Romans have for some reason taken on a Greek custom here rather than doing it in their traditional way. We don't know exactly how that came about, but it's something they often comment on.
Mm.
We don't know exactly when this festival, this ritual started. Livy claims it is as old as the temple. This is early on in his History of Rome in Book 1, Chapter 21. But scholars tend to think this cannot be possible.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably isn't quite that early. And as we know, Livy, before the 4th century, he doesn't have good records. So that may well be the case. And Livy also tells us that this was extended, so it kind of goes beyond the basic religious ritual. It was extended to a banquet, and that this happened during the Second Punic War, which, as you can imagine, is kind of a crisis time for the Romans. This is the war against Hannibal and might be a time where they kind of ramp up their rituals, try to offer more to the gods or to honor them in a greater way. He says that it's part of a range of methods that they put in at this time in 217 BCE, so fairly near the beginning of the war when things were really going wrong, to try and expiate disturbing prodigies. So the Romans were seeing all kinds of weird things being born and happening and strange things in the sky. And one of the things they did was to also have a banquet for Saturn at the Saturnalia.
Now, I imagine as time goes on, because this is a festival that sticks around and becomes more elaborate, that customs would change and that the people would get more involved. and much as has happened with Christmas, that it'd maybe get away from the religious element of it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, part of our problem is that our main source is from the 5th century. So Macrobius is around at a time when all of these different customs have accumulated.
Yes.
And he really, it's difficult for him to tell exactly what order they came in.
Mm.
One of the things he does tell us, this is in the Saturnalia, book 1, chapter 8, he says that on the day of the Saturnalia, the 17th of December, the cult statue of Saturn in the Temple of Saturn was unshackled from its woolen bonds. So in other words, the statue was in some way tied up, its hands or its feet, with shackles which were made of wool, and they were left unshackled for the period of the Saturnalia and then tied up again. One of the customs of the Saturnalia which had accumulated is that it's associated with a time of freedom. So people dropping their guard in all kinds of ways, they're at liberty, they're banqueting, they're drinking. So the normal ways of going about business are not happening. In fact, the courts are closed, as we've mentioned.
Yeah.
And the biggest part of this is that supposedly on the Saturnalia, slaves were liberated for the day and their masters were meant to serve them. Whether this actually happened in every household, I think, is highly debatable, but it's supposed to be. So everything's kind of topsy-turvy, overturned.
Mm.
Your roles are reversed. And it's in the slave and free that we see this discussed most frequently. So, for example, Pliny the Younger, in one of his letters, book 2, letter 17, he says, "When I retire to this garden summer house, I fancy myself 100 miles from my villa." So many villas Pliny's got. "And take a special pleasure in it at the Feast of the Saturnalia, when by license of that festive season, every other part of my house resounds with my servants' mirth. Thus I neither interrupt their amusements, nor they my studies."
Keep out of my way.
Yeah, this is Pliny rising above it all. He's allowing them their freedom, but he doesn't really want a part of it.
Yes, yeah. But traditionally, the master would be serving the servant.
Well, that's the impression we're given, that this change, certainly for the day of the Saturnalia, was absolute.
Mm.
And that presents were given, that there's a whole lot of celebrating going on. As Seneca puts it, people throw off the toga that's associated with, you know, civic activity and duty, I guess, for a Roman man. Business isn't going on. Or as he puts it, loose reins are given to public dissipation. So think of that over Christmas, the loose reins being given to public dissipation. He's really down on it, actually. In this epistle 18, he says, "Everywhere you may hear the sound of great preparations, as if there were some real difference between the days devoted to Saturn and those for transacting business."
I think that was the whole point of it, wasn't it?
yeah. "The great part of the city is in a bustle," he says. "Now is the month of December," so that's where we get the impression that the whole month of December has been given over to the Saturnalia. So we've got a bit of a division, and to be honest, this might be a coincidence, but it's a bit of a division between prose and poetry. Those who write in prose, they're writing philosophical texts, tend to think of it as almost a bit of a drag, something that interferes with public morality. The poetry tends to celebrate it more. So, for example, we've got Statius, a poet from around the same time as Pliny, who in his Silvae, book 1, poem 6, says, "Who can sing of the spectacle, the unrestrained mirth, the banqueting, the unbought feast, the lavish streams of wine? Ah, now I faint, and drunken with thy liquor, drag myself at last to sleep. For how many years shall this festival abide? Never shall age destroy so holy a day. While the hills of Latium remain, and Father Tiber, while thy Rome stands and the capital thou hast restored to the world, it shall continue." He's talking that the "thy" there is Domitian, the emperor at the time. So he's kind of crediting him with presiding over this great festival at this time, giving this to the people, making it so joyful.
Yeah, he would have been in his element then.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got accounts of a custom called the King of Saturnalia, don't
we? Yes. Saturnalicius Princeps. So I guess the leader, the prince.
Mm.
So Tacitus, in his account of Nero, and especially Nero's younger life, in Book 13 of the Annals, Chapter 15, he tells us that Nero was chosen by lot to be this Saturnalicius Princeps.
Yeah.
And he used it to kind of abuse his power and be nasty to his stepbrother and try and embarrass him. But what that tells us is that that role is meant to be someone who's going to be in charge of the whole festivities and kind of give roles to other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're not meant to do it in the manipulative, nasty way that Nero does.
So essentially king for a day.
Yeah, exactly. You get to be in charge of the party. One of the other things that I guess is a sort of a reversal associated with Saturnalia is clothing. So the toga is not worn on that day, and instead it's customary to wear something called the synthesis, which is colourful dress of Greek origin. So you're kind of throwing off traditional civic duty of being a Roman.
And putting on a brightly coloured Christmas jumper.
Yeah, and also to wear a hat that's associated with liberty, a pileus, which slaves supposedly wore on the day they got their freedom.
Mm. There were gifts. You mentioned that there were gifts given. So what might I expect under the Saturnalia tree for me on Saturnalia morning?
One of the traditional gifts is candles.
Yes.
Something we're still giving.
Still is. Yeah. Yep, some lavender or some sandalwood candles, sure.
Which might be connected to the solstice, that, you know, we're coming up to the darkest day of the year, or the least light, shortest day of the year. That's what we call it, isn't it?
Yeah, this might come in handy.
Yeah. And, of course, after that, the light's going to be returning, so perhaps it represents that hope and return of the new year.
In its defence, a candle would have been quite an expensive gift back then and
very useful. Extremely useful, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
You try being around without artificial light.
Exactly.
At that time of year.
You try collecting all that earwax.
I know that's a Father Ted joke. One of the other gifts, which is very strongly associated with the Saturnalia, is tiny little figurines or dolls. They're sometimes called, made of pottery or wax. These are called sigilla.
Mm-hmm.
And these were made specifically for the sigillaria, which is the last day of the Saturnalia, which might have been by coincidence. That might have been a separate festival. You know, the Saturnalia moves around in range so much that it knocks into the sigillaria. They're quite cute, some of these little figures. So Suetonius mentions how Augustus treats the Saturnalia in his biography of Augustus, chapter 75. Being Augustus, he does it well. Festivals and holidays, he celebrated lavishly as a rule, sometimes only in a spirit of fun. On the Saturnalia, and at any other time when he took it into his head, he would give now gifts of clothing or gold and silver, very generous guy, coins of every device, including old pieces of the kings and foreign money.
Mm.
So this is is 500 years old if it's from the time of the kings. Another time, nothing but haircloth, sponges, pokers, and tongs. Want to get him on a good day. And other such things under misleading names of double meaning. He doesn't explain what that is.
I assume it means a gag gift.
Yeah, something that sounds like it's going to be good, but it's actually a dud. Talking of duds, one of Martial's poems leads us to think that sometimes the presents weren't all they might have been. Remember I said he published these two books of poems which were about the gifts or could accompany the gifts that you give to somebody.
Mm.
From the Apophorata, book 14 is the Apophorata, poem 13, he says, "If anything still remains in the dregs of my cash box, it will be a present. Is there nothing? The box itself shall be the present." Just have the box, you'll open it and be disappointed. That suggests, again, that sometimes these presents were... I mean, you get cards that do that these days, don't they?
Yeah, sure.
They'll say your present is $1 million and then there's an asterisk and says, you know, that it's run out 2 years ago or something.
Oh, my presence is presents enough. There's your gag gift, Augustus. You can take that one. So the big question now is, as the Roman Empire forges on and becomes the Holy Roman Empire, is Saturnalia just Christmas in an earlier form?
Well, that's what people think. It's persuasive that they happen pretty close to one another, that the Saturnalia ran until the 23rd of December at least and took over the whole month. And now we have Christmas traditionally celebrated, at least in our calendar, on the 25th of December. And certainly there's a lot of overlap. In the Northern Hemisphere, this is the darkest time of year. This is a time of present giving, of festivity, where you break off from what you're normally doing, your normal business. It's come out of a religious festival, but it's become a kind of universal holiday in places where it is celebrated. And there's the important, I guess, distinction between the Saturnalia and other festivals in that even though the Saturnalia had a sacrifice attached to it, which would have been the most important one, would have been carried out at the Temple of Saturn in Rome, it's largely practiced in people's homes where they have a special dinner and they give gifts to each other and, you know, and maybe they serve their slaves. It's not associated with a temple that the Christians could maybe take over or perhaps knock down and turn into something else. It doesn't depend upon those ritual spaces to happen. So it has longevity and it can be practiced throughout the empire. It's not just tied to specific sites in Rome or Italy. So in the 4th century, when Pope Julius really makes December 25th, the date on which the birth of Jesus Christ is celebrated, there is this idea that the two festivals fold together.
And it makes sense to try and acclimatize people more to this new religion that's taking over if it adopts the old holidays that everyone is familiar with, well, or elements of it.
Exactly. And there are so many parts of early Christianity that are clearly doing that are borrowing certain rituals or forms from paganism to make it easier for people to take it on, to digest it.
Okay.
That's a great way to end, though.
Well, I can give you your Saturnalia present.
There's a Saturnalia present as well. I've got a Caesar's Gallic War mug for the Saturnalia. Thank you, Matt. That's lovely.
You're quite welcome. You're quite welcome, Rhiannon.
It's beautiful, and it's got some beautiful art on it of Caesar facing up to a hairy Gaul.
We can give a shout-out to the artist Rich Morris for
that. Thank you, Rich.
That was Dr. Rhiannon Evans, Senior Lecturer in Classics and Ancient History at La Trobe University, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it in Apple Podcasts or your local friendly neighbourhood podcatching service. If you'd like to give us a Saturnalia present, give us a like and a review. You can like the Emperors of Rome podcast on Facebook, and you can follow both myself and Rhiannon Evans on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I am at Nightlight Guy. That's it for Emperors of Rome this year. So until next time, I'm Matt Smith. Eos Saturnalia, and thanks for listening.